right, welcome back. We've been having a great show so far, and I'm sure that this hour is going to, you know, live up to expectations. We have someone well known to Trinidad and Tobago, a man who has been contributing intellectually to public affairs in the country, chartered accountant Afra Raymond. Chartered surveyor Afra Raymond and former chairman of the Joint Consultative Council, which, as you know, is the umbrella body for the construction industry in Trinidad and Tobago. Afra, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Ralph. It's lovely to be here again in your company. I heard somebody say something about Darien, and I'm missing Darien. I never thought I'd say that, but I'm missing Darien, so it must be one of those funny Tuesday afternoons.
Yeah, Darien was unfortunately unable to make it today.
Yes.
So, Afra, tell us, is the procurement legislation in place? Is it working? Is it effective?
Well, the law has passed through Parliament, but it hasn't been fully proclaimed. It's been a partial proclamation to give them the powers they need to start putting the final things in place. And the final things are, for the benefit of listeners and yourself, Ralph, the final things would be to complete the regulations, because it's a framework legislation that operates through regulations and guidelines and handbooks. Those things have to be completed, after which they're submitted to Parliament for what they call negative resolution. You're a former parliamentarian, you know what it means. It's a procedure we have to go through that the Parliament has to approve. The things are not debated, but they're put forward for parliamentary approval. The other things that have to take place, let me just give you a quick list for the show, for the benefit of listeners. The other things that have to take place would be the hiring of staff, and I know that's taking place because the advertisements are in the press last week. There were advertisements of database managers and different people who have to staff the organization. The organization will have to be supervising the procurement activities of a vast range of organizations that transact public money. And lastly, there would have to be the question of training, because one of the things that is very unique about this act is that for the first time we have a system of controls where the only penalties are custodial. So it will no longer be possible if you are TNTech or at WASA, just to call two examples, and there's wrongdoing. There's a situation that exists now where TNTech and WASA could be guilty of something, and they would write a check and pay damages to somebody or settle a matter. That's no longer possible. Every organization that transacts public money, every public organization, what they call a procuring entity, has to have a named procurement officer, the chief procurement officer, who's a biological person, a person with a first name, a last name, a date of birth. If that organization is found to be in breach, as the law specifies, that person will be guilty. That person is the one who will be going to prison. There's no evasion to say the minister told me this, or the board approved that, or cabinet. That person, and that's what's extremely promising about this situation, and it's a different scenario we're looking at now.
Right, but is it not taking rather long to come into being?
Not in my respectful view. Mm-hmm. I mean, let me give you a context. When the Central Tenders Board Act 1961, which is the act of this before this one, controlling government contracts, when that act was passed in 1961, it was the period of Dr. Eric Williams, just before independence, PNM was riding high and so. But the first Central Tenders Board, the actual board carried out the functions. The first board was not sworn in until 1966. Mm-hmm. It took 5 years for the first board to be sworn in. For the same administrative back and forth we're discussing and getting a building, getting telephone lines, getting stationery, hiring staff and all of that stuff. If Mr. Munilal Lalchan and his colleagues who have been appointed to the board manage to put this system into operation by the end of the year, and I think that is where they're headed to. If they manage to put the system in place by the end of the year, they would have done it in 2 years. And given the tremendous sort of administrative reluctance among all kinds of people to put this proper system in place, I think they would have done very, very well. Mm. So I don't think it's too slow. Keep going. I know there are people in there working very hard. Keep going. Maintain your courage. Keep going. We need to do this. We need to do it right. And it's a big chance for us to restore some important things in the Republic.
Right. I agree with you fully. And I am just very anxious for the thing to happen.
We all are,
Because, you know, contracts are being awarded, a lot of development things are happening. You have highway being awarded. You have library facilities.
Yes.
A lot of things are happening.
Yes.
Are you? Is your community, your group, your colleagues, are they satisfied with the way things are moving? I mean, with respect to all of these massive contracts.
Well, I'm unable to speak for the group because, of course, I resigned as the president back in November of 2015, and the group will have to speak for itself, I mean, whenever it finds its voice. But the point is that I could say that there's unease, having spoken to various members of the group.
Right.
There's unease because we have a recurrence of the huge government-to-government contracts. The Labre dry dock that you mentioned is just another, the most recent example of the huge government-to-government contracts which are being executed in this case with a Chinese concern, China Harbor Engineering. And the prospects are very low to zero local employment or local engagement on those projects. So we had a situation in the time before we had Mrs. Kamla Prasad Biswas's Vancouver Children's Hospital, the whole project was built with Chinese labor. Okay, let's talk facts. It was borrowed money, and there's a five-year moratorium, and we have to start paying back that money somewhere around now, because it was around 2012 or 2013 that project happened. It still hasn't been occupied, so we now have to start paying back in foreign exchange for a project that has still not been occupied and was built without the involvement of our people. We are now, the time before that, we had Mr. Manning, and we had many concerns at that time around the same sort of issues, and we have the same thing happening here now. So there are real concerns within the industry about the extent to which our national resources are being committed to these foreign contractors on a basis where local people cannot participate. That is a real concern,
yeah,
within the industry.
Does the new legislation empower you to intervene?
It speaks to local content. It does speak to local content, and there's a way that the procurement regulator can raise local content as a valid concern within procurement operations going forward. It'll be up to the individuals in that board to set a policy, and that policy would find expression within the regulations and the handbooks. But the answer is yes, there are instruments in there to do
right.
that, yeah.
So the focus is naturally on the China Harbor Engineering Company.
Yes.
I mean, I must say, from my reading mm-hmm. and my investigation, it does not have a very savory reputation.
No, it doesn't.
How do you feel about this company coming to work here?
Well, there are a lot of question marks about the company, as has been covered extensively in the press. The company was subject, and a group of which it was part was subject of a World Bank ban that went, I think it expired on 11th of January last year. So there was a ban to do with improper procedures, with corruption and procurement procedures and so on. And there have been many complaints about them globally. I mean, you have Uganda, we have situations in Guinea, we have situations in Guyana, there's a complaint going on about
in
them.
Jamaica,
Sri Lanka,
Bahamas.
Jamaica, there are a lot of in what I would call the global south, there are many complaints about the operations of the company in terms of its procurement and its procedures engineering firm. But quite apart from that, because there's a way, Ralph and listeners, that we can zero down on China Harbor Engineering and the discussion can become about them, I think I'd like to step back from that, having made those few points.
Yeah.
And I would like to look at the broader prospect of what this project is about. So I think those are, if I could put some further food for thought on the table.
Yeah, yes, sure. What is the project about?
Sure. The first thing I would say is that the project is being promoted. If you read what the Prime Minister said and what is being said in the press about it by the Chinese Harbour people and the Chinese ambassador and so on, it's being promoted as an investment, as a substantial investment in Trinidad and Tobago. And of course, nobody in today's economic climate would shrug or sniff at investment. Investment is a good thing. It involves employment and foreign exchange and economic activity and so on. But the simple fact to begin with is that we are borrowing money to build that project. We, Trinidad and Tobago, is borrowing money to build that project.
What is the ballpark figure?
This is it now. So if you put some basic questions forward, we have missing gaps. How much money are we borrowing? We don't know. What is the rate of interest? We don't know that either. What is the repayment period? We don't know that either.
Who are we borrowing it from?
From the Exim Bank of China.
Well,
Dr. Rowley. Dr. Rowley did say so.
And that is a problem in itself.
Dr. Rowley did say so in his speech.
And
yeah?
That is a problem by itself, yeah?
Correct. So at the starting point, it's described as an investment, but in reality, it's a massive borrowing the country is entering into. So that's the first thing, point of note, with all of those details. The other point is this. When we come to the physical complex itself, it's huge. The piece of land involved, because I've been doing some background reading, and so the piece of land involved is just under 900 acres. I think it's 872 acres of land to be developed for this complex. So we're describing an immense development. Now, we are also told by Dr. Rowley's statement and the press and so, that it's China Harbor Engineering Company that have been selected as the selected contractor. So we borrowed the money to do the major complex, and China Harbor have been selected. And we were told that the Trinidad and Tobago government, the state, will have a share in the completed complex. Well, let's walk through it to another stage. Let's walk from the Romidi funding into the Romidi construction.
Yeah.
So we have this tremendous level of activity to develop a complex on 892 acres of land in South Trinidad. And China Harbor Engineering are doing the development. They're designing and constructing. Now, based on the track record in the past, how many Trinidadian or Tobagonian workers are going to be employed on that project? How many Trinidadian and Tobagonian engineers, electricians, plumbers, carpenters, tile men, roof men? Okay. So we need to understand, we had a time of high unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Petrotrin thing is rolling around the national community as a huge discussion. And we are at the same time we are borrowing to build a huge complex. Is there any provision in the government agreement that Dr. Rowley signed for our people to be employed? Those are real legitimate questions.
Right. Yeah, legitimate questions, because if you look at precedent and you look at the way it's been happening elsewhere.
They never employed anybody.
Yeah. No, it's Chinese workers all the time.
So it's a real question.
Yeah. In fact, I was looking at a clip from a Ugandan foreign minister who was complaining about that. They just Chinese workers all the time. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that that it has to be a cause for concern.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a situation where in the construction stage, we have a concern, a solid concern.
Mm-hmm.
And my third issue really is to do with the whole completed complex, because we're dealing with a shipbuilding and a ship repair dockyard facility and so on. And there's a lot of potential. I mean, I was associated with a similar project 10, 15 years ago. So I'm familiar with the sort of outline of the thing. There's a lot of economic activity that could come from it. Dr. Rowley told us about 5,000 jobs, permanent jobs going forward. He told us about $500 million, I think it was the figure, per year that would be earned by the country. And I'm not sure what is the setup, whether it is that local companies will be employed in this sort of complex when it's finished, whether local people would be employed, and on what basis are we estimating that $500 million is coming into the country? I'm not clear what is the underlying arrangement in relation to what it is we're doing going forward. And I think we need to know these things, because we're at a stage, Ralph, in the country's history where we've never had more educated people. We've never had more doctors, lawyers, engineers, accountants, school teachers. If our grandparents were to come back and see us, it'd be unimaginable to them how many of us have these qualifications and how easy it's been for us. Mm-hmm. Relatively speaking, their sacrifice made it easy for us. And the burning question, therefore, has to be, given that we have such an educated population, why aren't we given more information?
Exactly.
This is the burning question in my mind.
Right. I am very concerned about the secrecy. For example, the gas deal that was signed recently, we know little about, don't even know the gas price.
Yes, yes.
But let's go back to the debt.
Yes.
The borrowing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trinidad and Tobago is already over 65% of GDP.
I heard so.
Right. And we are moving towards 70%. We will have to continue to borrow to finance our budget. And so that borrowing is inescapable. I do not know whether the increased revenue that we would have from gas, and a little bit of gas, more gas that we're producing, whether that will be able to prevent a budget deficit.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to be borrowing from China. We already have borrowing from China,
NAPA
and SAPA and so on.
Yeah. And Children's Hospital.
Right, Children's Hospital. So we are building the debt. We are building the debt.
That's correct.
Will we be able to service this debt is the other question.
Mm-hmm.
And what will happen if we are not able to service it? Is it possible that we can find ourselves in a situation that Sri Lanka found itself in with the Hambantota port that was built and which China now occupies for 99 years?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you see this thing playing out?
Well, I don't want to be a prophet of doom, but the reality is that we have to be aware of what it is we are agreeing to. We have a scenario in the country now, Ralph, where we have large-scale development taking place. As I said recently, we have development taking place on public land. The development is large scale, it's funded by public money. It's supposedly being done for the benefit of the public. But when you ask for details, which I do, one is told that you can't get those details. They're private and confidential. It's a private and confidential agreement. There's a confidentiality clause. It's a private thing. It's a business concern, commercial reasons, and so on and so on. So in fact, as part of the encounter I'm having, is a series of encounters I'm having in the course of my research, is with this difficulty. So as I said to you, there's a pattern, and it resembles an abusive pattern. And we have to step back a little bit. I mean, Ralph, this time of the year is important for me, because we're sitting bestride some important things. On the 1st of August is emancipation, which of course was a most important day for the development of the country and the Caribbean and so. On the 31st of August is independence, which of course is liberation from the crown in a certain sort of way. And on the 24th of September is Republic Day, which is next week, Monday. And I look at those 2 months, I call them the season of reflection. So you move from emancipation to independence to Republic Day. And it's like the dates fall in a lovely sequence, and the events fall in a lovely sequence. But what I'm wondering about is this. You see, I think about these things.
Are we serious enough as a nation to engage in the kind of reflection that you're talking about?
Oh yeah, we're engaging in it right now. Even if you were saying me skeptically, we're engaging in it. Because what I'm asking myself is, what is all of this for? So we got to this point where we are doing these major developments, and we are doing them in a manner that is secretive. And in the bad old days, you know, before we had independence and emancipation, in the bad old days, the days of colonialism and slavery, whether it was Africa or India or wherever, the bosses would go and they would get to a place and they would like a place, and they would say, "Here, lovely, huh? Look how nice it is." And they would call some natives, and they would clear down the place. And they would clear down the place and cut down trees and put the houses. Maybe it was overlooking a lake. Maybe it was by the beach. It was a nice place. They liked the place. Other times now, they may like a fruit. They say, "This fruit is great." They cut down all the trees in the area. They only plant that fruit, monoculture in your skin. Okay? And all the while, the natives are going along because they have to, the force of weapons, the force of colonialism, the force of the mind, imperialism and all these things, racism, all these things that we have to live with now. Now, we have emancipation. We have independence. In fact, we're a republic now. We're not even part of the Queen anymore, we're a republic. But somebody could still come along and say, "We're clearing down this place. And we're putting this here. And we're putting down there. And you can't ask me anything." And that's what we have to live with now. We have to understand what is the meaning of that. Because I think it's completely unacceptable. I'm just saying what I think. And we're here to have, it's an opinion space, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity. I think it's unacceptable. One is not alleging any financial corruption. I wouldn't go so far. Not with anybody who's in office now. But it's not necessary to go that far. It is completely unsatisfactory in a republic of educated people in 2018 to be carrying on in that fashion. As I say, you're developing public land with public money, supposedly for the benefit of the public, and concealing the details of what you're doing for the public. Completely unethical, completely immoral, completely unacceptable in 2018. And I don't care whether anybody took any money and who filled out their integrity commission form. That's got nothing to do with what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the fraud squad. I'm not talking about the procurement regulator. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm putting the discussion on a level that we need to engage in this season of reflection.
Mm. It's interesting you should have that perspective, because as you talk about independence and republicanism and our journey away from colonialism, China is now being accused of a new kind of colonialism.
Very interesting. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, do we run that risk of being colonized by the Chinese? As is happening, people are saying it is happening on the African continent. Mm-hmm. It is happening in parts of Asia. Yeah. And, you know, they are all over the place. And, of course, I have already contended that under the present president, Xi Jinping, who I consider a nationalist ideologue, China wants to restore a lost greatness, and he has a mission. He is on a mission. He's accused, the country is being accused of, you know, saddling countries with debt and then seizing strategic resources and strategic assets.
Well, this is all part of the this is all part of the process of what Malcolm X 55 years ago described as dollar diplomacy. Malcolm X is describing the actions of the United States and European powers of that time in Africa, and he called it dollar diplomacy, where you would make aid and loans and so available and eventually get control of those countries. That was the phrase that Malcolm came up with. And it's still with us, eh? So we need to be aware of it. I don't take any responsibility away from myself. We are citizens of a republic. As I have made a central theme of this, we are educated people, and we have to take responsibility for our country. We have to hold our leadership to a standard and says, and I am saying that is not acceptable. It is not acceptable to be doing sandals in Tobago, which is what's happening. So we have sandals in Tobago. If I could shift focus slightly.
Yeah, I wanted to go there.
To put my point right.
I wanted to go there.
We have sandals in Tobago as a major proposal of the current administration. And Dr. Rowley stood in Parliament, it was on the 10th of October last year, and Dr. Rowley was very emphatic, as he can be when he speaks, and he said that in fact he had nothing to hide. He was nothing like the previous administration. He had nothing under the table, there was nothing under the carpet, everything was above board, it was simple. They wanted to bring Sandals to Tobago, they were in discussions with Sandals, there was no secret agreement. There's nothing secret. And 2 days later they signed an MOU with Sandals. 28th of February this year, Adam Stewart, who is the son of Butch Stewart, and at that time he was CEO of the group, Adam Stewart gives a major press conference, and he was rebutting something that Rudolf Munilal said, Dr. Munilal, and he was saying, listen, there's no secret. There's nothing hidden. It's a commercial arrangement. We want to put a hotel in Tobago. We're in talks with the government, and we're trying to get a project done. There's nothing hidden. We have nothing to hide. There's no secret terms, no secret conditions. The same day, I sent a Freedom of Information request to the office of the Prime Minister, the Permanent Secretary. I'm a formal person like that, in writing. And the gentleman wrote back to me, the head of the public service, to say to me, the document contains a confidentiality clause. So this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with agreements that aren't secret, but they contain confidentiality clauses. Hmm. And the principle to which I'm objecting is public land being developed with public money, supposedly for the benefit of the public, but the terms and conditions are private. That is unacceptable in a republic. I'm not alleging any financial corruption. I'm saying it is improper behavior. It is no longer acceptable. I am trying to create, in this series of discourses, and again, I thank you, Ralph, and I thank 95.5, I'm trying to create a new normal in terms of how we see ourselves. That is our land. That is our money. That is our future that you are discussing. And we need to be at the table when that discussion takes place.
What pertains in other countries, that kind of information that you want, is it really readily available, for example, in the advanced societies?
Well, the sort of thing you are talking about, Ralph, is actually heavily contested elsewhere. Let me just say to you, it's not a simple, straightforward, straight line thing. There are some countries in the world where, in fact, I think a couple of the South American countries that have advanced and anti-corruption legislation, and where, in fact, they have situations where they say that, in fact, unless a contract is published, it's not enforceable in court. So you could be the biggest multinational in the world. We are publishing every contract we enter into. And if you have one that you manage to have a friend who's a PS and he didn't publish it, you can't go to court about it. You have no legal rights. So by that simple device, they created an environment where everybody wants their contract published. And it hasn't impaired those companies' development. I think it's Bolivia and somewhere else. I don't remember the other country. And also, there's also the perspective that our Freedom of Information legislation, which was crafted when Mr. Ramesh Lawrence Maraj was the AG, our Freedom of Information legislation is actually very advanced. It's more powerful than the one they have in the UK. So in the UK, they have immense difficulties with the same set of things that I'm talking about here. So it isn't, we shouldn't be thinking that in England this wouldn't happen, or in America this wouldn't happen. They have immense difficulties with exactly the same thing, large-scale development in which public funds are deployed, and the actual terms and conditions only come out years later. When you realize, wait, But all this money was going here in England. They have a whole series of ongoing scandals, Ralph, about what they call the PFI, the Private Finance Initiative, which in Trinidad at the moment we call public-private partnership, to do the health funding and health centers and the hospitals and so on. And the people who invested in those things made huge amounts of money. The public was told it would lead to more efficient services, it would be cheaper, and it didn't go that way. It went the opposite.
How is it working in the housing sector in Trinidad and Tobago?
The public-private partnership?
Yeah.
Well, there's only one scheme that's been done in the current rounds. There were some of them done before when Mr. Pandey was Prime Minister. I mean, the most notable one when Mr. Pandey was Prime Minister, I didn't support it at all, was what we call Coover North.
Yeah.
Which was done with some developers I know, and so on, some land that was surplus, currently land was used to do that development north of Coover Town Centre. At the moment, we have NH, which is Emily Elias, doing one at Mount Hope. I think it's Mahogany Court. It's about 135 or 145 apartments. And that complex is underway at the moment. The structure financially is interesting because the NHA, the government, had the land. The private contractors come in, so there's a build, finance, construct, and sale. So the private contractors raise the money. They will design the complex, they will build the complex, and the apartments that are sold, that is how they will get paid. So they're not actually going to get a check from the Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
So they
have a responsibility to market this.
Yes,
thing.
Yes. In conjunction with HGC, and HGC will put people from their waiting list. And so my difficulty with that approach to the whole housing question, which is what you're asking me, my difficulty is that it does very little to satisfy the needs of most of the applicants. And most of the applicants don't need a house to buy. They need a house they can live in that they can afford to rent, because they can't afford to buy. So the public-private partnership, as interesting as it is, and the model at Mahogany Court in Mount Hope is interesting. As interesting as it is, it falls short in terms of satisfying what is the real demand for public housing. And the real demand for public housing is for public housing that is affordable to those who can only afford to rent, for the poorer applicants.
I'm also concerned about the fact that we do not have campaign finance reform in place. And I'm wondering about the power of supporters and financiers on our government. We have seen it throughout our history. Do we have such a situation? And in the absence of the, and that's why I was so concerned about the pace for the procurement legislation. In the absence of that, so we still have a kind of free fall for financiers, don't we?
Yes, we do. And at the moment, the procurement law is not in place, as I explained at the beginning. And that means that the old Central Tenders Board arrangement is in place, which means that once something is put to a state enterprise, so just to make a topical example, the ferry with the Australian arrangement, I think Dr. Rowley was in Australia with Stuart Young, and there was some, they had a discussion with some boat builders out there, and they're going to get a boat or two, maybe it's two boats, from the Australian people. And that type of arrangement, A, it's going to NITCO, which means that it's a state enterprise, it's outside the Central Tenders Board Act. And B, it could be put together under government-to-government arrangement, which is another form of exemption. So there are two exemptions that exist there. So we have to be aware that there's still a lot of gaps for things to pass.
So it could be put under government-to-government,
yes,
even though a private company in a particular country is going to be executing
it. Yes, absolutely. That's what happens, because governments... So, for example, the one we just discussed at Labrie, that's a government-to-government arrangement. And
but
the Chinese government has said, this company will be building it. That's a state enterprise.
But a state enterprise company,
Yes. China Harbour is a state enterprise.
State enterprise. So, in fact, it is a major instrument of the Chinese...
Correct.
One Belt, One Road initiative.
Mm-hmm.
But as you say, with the Australians, it could have there could be a private company providing the ferries,
mm-hmm,
even under a government to government.
Absolutely, it happens a lot.
All right. Okay, so we are going on to 6:10, and of course, we want to take some calls. So let's open the lines. Call us at 622-3937. We are talking to Mr. Afro Raymond. You can call us on the issues that he's raising. So we have a caller. Hello?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen, and to your listeners.
Yep.
This is very scary, to say the least, and to you know, I hope, Ralph, that this conversation also with Mr. Raymond, that this sort of education for the community, for the country as a matter of fact, continues. I have been following some of these Chinese companies, China Railway, China Harbor, and a couple others. And what I have been following, this is for the last 15 years or so, this seems to me it is not by default, but it is by design by the Chinese government, right? And it's not just us. The evidence is there now. Mr. Raymond spoke about how can we be such an educated people now. You know, our ancestors made a lot of sacrifices for us to be where we are and to be and to allow people to, you know, in how we put it in local parlance, pull wool over our eyes. And, you know, Mr. Raymond, I'll tell you something. Whenever these things happen to countries, smaller countries, you know, where we used to be a third world country, you know, you say to yourself, China didn't invade here through a war. Our own people are the ones who are selling us out, okay? And it's the same thing that happened in every other country that you would have spoken about. And I am certain that if those deals are examined, you would find a lot of things wrong with them. It's like you said, I don't want to point a finger at anybody and say anything about financial misappropriation or anything else. But don't you find that it's really interesting that the countries that are targeted for these things, we must look at these countries and see where they appear on the World Corruption Index also. But this is very, very frightening. China, or, you know, to me, it is obvious that they have a mission around the world, right? And we have to be paying some serious attention to this. You examine over the last 15 years the amount of supermarkets and casinos, etc., etc., etc. I'm not talking anything that anybody is not aware of, so we're not going to go into any details. I'm just saying, tie everything in together and see what you come up with. Thanks a lot.
Hello, yes?
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Raymond and
good day.
Samarize. Well, I like your efforts at transparency, but what I'd like to get, please, is what specific information do you need from, like, the Library Project and the Sandals Project? You know, could you flesh out, I mean, some examples of information you need so we can get away from innuendos now? Because, I mean, you can make a lot of general statements, and we, you know, I mean, I think a lot of the public would like to get see more clearly now.
Yeah.
What the kind of thing you really want from these
people. All right, so he will answer whilst you are off it.
Okay, well, the sort of thing we'd want to know, for example, in relation to the Sandals Project, we'd want to know what is the arrangement for the financing of the project. In other words, who is financing that project, on what terms? We want to know what are the arrangements for the construction of the project. How is it going to be constructed? In what terms? Designed and constructed? What are the arrangements for the maintenance of the complex? Because a complex like a hotel, where people, the average stay is less than a week, will be subject to a tremendous amount of wear and tear. There's a very high level of occupancy. Where does the obligation for maintenance and upkeep reside? We'd want to know who's responsible for keeping funds for emergency repairs. We'd want to know what is the proportion of money to be divided of the turnover of the hotel between the state, which has put out the land and the building, and Sandals, who put their brand and their management in place. We'd want to know what is the arrangement in terms of splitting the revenue. We'd want to know what are arrangements in respect of staff training and promotion. Okay? Those are a few dimensions.
Yeah, we would want to know the relationship between the local economy and...
Correct.
And
Sandals. Those are a few
yeah.
Sketching it for you to answer your questions, sir.
Right. Let's go. Hello?
Oh, pleasant. Good afternoon to the panel, Mr. Raymond and Mr. Maharaj.
Hi.
Good day.
Mr. Maharaj, the Chinese have made their position abundantly clear, you know.
Uh-huh.
Is that, you know, people apparently don't listen or they don't understand. And they tell you straight, if you're planning for a year, you plan... Green.
Yeah.
If you're planning for a decade, you plant trees. And if you're planning for a century, you plant men.
Yeah.
And they are doing exactly that. If you can't pay, well, then you pay otherwise. It is straight.
Yeah.
If you want your assistance, there's a price you have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
As everything else, If you go to the Yankees, it's the same thing. If you go to the Russians, it's the same thing. So what is wrong with going to the Chinese?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? It's all in the mix.
Yeah, well, we're not talking about cars and houses here. We're talking about a sovereign nation. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Hello? Hello?
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good day. I'm Mr.
Raymond.
Raymond.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good day.
Yeah. Break this down for me because I'm trying to work out a procurement and work out about how we do things in this country. We have some principle about TNTEC and WASA, plus the public works. We don't call it anymore. We don't call it that anymore, but we...
Caller, you'll have to make it quicker, eh? Because yeah. the number...
And the kind of things they do to people, like they take the current when they send it back. We don't know if we can mark the right amount of current to work with our equipment.
What's it called?
And,
okay,
and,
yeah.
All and right. WASA, they dig up the roads.
All right. Okay. Thank you. I think you're a little bit off course here in terms of our discussion. So we need to go on another caller. Hello? Hello?
Yes, gentlemen.
Good, yeah.
You know,
good
I afternoon. Would say 1.3 million. We can't fight China. We can't fight the United States. I mean, you could go in a little dark corner and console ourselves about sovereignty and this and that. But we are just a big rock in the Atlantic Ocean. But back to Russia. Compared to the previous government and what is going on now, how do you read the level of scandal in terms of these speed projects and so on? Is it on par? Is the UNC fine front in terms of scandal? Or give me your impression.
I'm not sure what is guiding that, but I made it clear many times. There's not much difference, okay? The difference of tone and so on, but there's not much difference. The simple litmus test would be, if indeed, let's make two examples before we go to the news. If indeed there's a clear and a compelling case that's been made out by professional reports, for instance, a closed Petrotrin, what could be the harm in publishing it? If indeed there's a clear and compelling case, as Dr. Rowley said in Parliament on 10th of October 2017, and Adam Stewart said on the 28th of February this year, there's a clear and compelling case, nothing to hide. Why not publish the MOU for sandals? What could be the harm? Okay, and I could go on, I have like another 20 examples, but I made my point, okay?
Okay.
We need to get to a better level of behavior if we are to make progress, and we have to make use of all of our people, and we can't do that unless people have the information.
We take one final call and then after I make some closing comments. Hello?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I enjoy your essays. You sound like a very educated and intellectual guy. Mr. Raymond.
Yes.
Yeah, but I want to say very quickly that our work attitude in Trinidad and Tobago and in the Caribbean, it is very, very low.
Yeah, well. But we're not talking.
But it caused the Chinese. It caused the Chinese to do and to use their people to do jobs in the Caribbean. We are very less difficult. Our problem work attitude. The Chinese are different entirely.
All right.
How they work.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Afra, we're coming to the 6 o'clock news. We have a few minutes left. I just give you an opportunity to say some things further on this entire situation.
Well. I want to thank 95.5 again for the opportunity to speak to this. And I want to make the point again that, as I said in the middle of the program, one is not alleging any financial corruption. Just to be utterly, utterly clear. I'm dealing with a standard of governance. I'm dealing with a standard of leadership and a standard of communication with the population. And it's no good having, for example, the Minister of Energy, Senator Franklin Khan, spoke to the Parliament on the 11th of September, last week, Tuesday, it was a week ago, and he was speaking about the Petrotrin closure. And he went into great detail about they had hired McKinsey and they had hired Solomon Associates, and those are two top-level firms. The two top-level firms had studied all of these issues, and they had made certain recommendations, and the Petrotrin Board had considered it and put it to Cabinet, and Cabinet had agreed it. And he then went on, it's very interesting, It's in my newspaper column tomorrow, he expressed. He then went on, and he went on to say that, in fact, he is considering publishing some of the information. So Senator Wade Mark, who was in the chamber on the other side, asked him, well, when are you publishing it? He said, well, I'm only one member of cabinet, but I said, we are considering it. And Wade Mark said, well, when are you going to publish it? He said, well, in due course. So we really have an issue to deal with here. And it's an issue of, as I said, of ethical conduct, conduct that wouldn't be acceptable in your private life.
Right.
It wouldn't be acceptable in your home. It wouldn't be acceptable in your business place. But you could tell the population of the country that. And the fact is, the population of the country, we employ you.
Right.
You are our staff.
Right. So we do not need secret government.
No.
We do not need secret government. Don't. That's the bottom line.
No, we don't.
Folks, thank you all very, very much for being with us. And Afra, thank you very, very much for coming.
Thank you.
And I'm sure we will continue this conversation. Good.